Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley. We are going to have an off-topic show. There will not be any Illini speak on this show tonight. We are going to do a preview of WrestleMania 40, headlined by The Rock, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins. To do this, I've got a huge fan of WWE, a guy who's also interviewed many of these wrestlers, Lance Allen. You guys may find him familiar from our podcast where we do previews of the Wisconsin Badgers, particularly in football season. He's done that with us. He's been a great guest. He's been on Big Sports Radio and on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. And he and I are going to go through the card, talk about the matches, talk about how we might book it, and give you some stories to go along with it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. We'll be right back after these commercials with Lance Allen and myself. Stay tuned.
Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by advertising on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. The weekly two-hour syndicated show airs on more than 20 stations and is heard in six states throughout the Midwest, including Chicago, St. Louis, the Quad Cities, Peoria, Bloomington, Springfield, Champaign, Decatur, Rockford, and Quincy, just to name a few, with a reach of more than 11 million people. For information, send an email to mike@illiniguys.com and let's work together to grow your business. That's mike@illiniguys.com and let the power and reach of the Illini Guys Network work for you.
Have you ever tried to buy gold and silver and felt like you were talking to a used car salesman? That's because the precious metals industry is like the Wild West. Salesmen can say pretty much anything or make any promise they want without repercussion. But Genesis Gold Group is different. They're a faith-driven Christian precious metals company and believe in educating their customers, not pressuring them for a quick sale. Genesis Gold Group focuses on customer service, not sleazy marketing. Genesis Gold Group is named after the first book of the Bible for a reason. Proper stewardship of wealth is their specialty. Find out why they've earned a 5 out of 5 rating through the Better Business Bureau and how they can help you secure your wealth or retirement through physical precious metals. Call right now to learn more.
800-238-3714. 800-238-3714. 800-238-3714. That's 800-238-3714.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. Tonight is a special night because this is an off-topic Eye on the Illini. I've been joined by free agent-to-be Lance Allen of WTMJ4 up in Milwaukee. He's the sports guy there, 28 years, and he actually was in Madison before that, and I was actually young enough that I was there too. So we overlapped. We never met, but we overlapped in our life back in the early 90s. Lance, we're going to go over WrestleMania and we're going to kind of take people through some of the matches. We're going to mention all the matches, but we don't have the attention span to do all of them. So we're going to kind of fly through some of them.
And you can tell I'm old school, Mike. I got the old school Macho Man shirt on. So there you go.
Oh yeah. I mean, how can you not thinking? I know. How can you not? I mean, I loved his things when he would start going into just weird stuff and it made no sense. And poor Okerlund had to stand there and nod his head. And then a few years later, the Ultimate Warrior did, but he just didn't have the ability. Like, he would make no sense as well. But Macho Man, you'd pay attention to, and the Ultimate Warrior, you're like, okay, you know, we're hitting the 30-second mark here, bud. So just get through this promo so we can watch whatever's next.
Macho Man, all the more you need to know out of him, Mike, is he got a cup of creamer over by saying the cream rises to the top. He literally took one of those Coffee Mate creamers and used it in a promo, and it's one of the greatest promos of all time. That's all the more you need to say about the brilliance of the Macho Man.
Yeah, he has several of them that would be in the top 20, I think, of all time. I don't know that I would have a better promo for my personal thing than when Scott Steiner explained the math on why he was better than another wrestler. And I still save that. And my wife is an actuary, and I'll play it for her sometime. And she's just like, you're so dumb.
It's 144 2/3% true that this right here, this podcast is the best in the U.S. No, I love the fact that there's these like rabbit holes you can go down somewhere on YouTube, Mike. They prove that Steiner math actually works, and it can be true. But I just love the fact that is one of the best promos of all time.
Yeah, he was fantastic, and I do think, you know, every year they say it's the best WrestleMania of all time. I don't know how that goes, but I have to tell you that the return of The Rock, and we'll talk a little bit more detail, but I do think this is one of the more intriguing WrestleManias, and unfortunately, I can remember them all. So
yeah, no, and there have been some clunkers. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I agree with you that I think this, on paper, script, whatever you want to say, has the potential to be one of the best of all time.
Yeah. So let's jump into it. And I'm gonna go the first match on, and we don't know exactly the order each evening because I'm not going off of one of those. But we do know this is for night one, which is Saturday. And the first match listed at the bottom is Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee versus Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. Now, pro wrestling and NIL funds are very similar because the heights and the weights of pro wrestlers are exaggerated, very similar to how players try to exaggerate and schools try to exaggerate how much money they pay players. And you know, that doesn't hurt any of the players because they go, hey, it sounds like I'm making more money. The school says, hey, it sounds like people are going to want to come see us. And so but when it goes to wrestling, Rey Mysterio may be like 5'6" or 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
My pro wrestlers have to be big dudes or at least bigger. I realize he's great. I don't like the flippy stuff very much. But I will say my highlight of all time with him, and I think it was when he was in WCW and back when Big Show was known, you know, as the giant, you know, there was a battle royal. And one time Rey Mysterio jumped off the rope and Big Show caught him with one hand around the neck. And he looked at the camera and he waved bye-bye and threw him over the top rope into the crowd. And that was my favorite Rey Mysterio moment.
You are sadistic, man. You like all the bad guys, the heels and people like booting people.
Yes. Awesome. I don't know if you have a Rey Mysterio moment, but he's never really done it for me. He's a good guy. It seems like everybody loves him in the industry, but I just never been a fan.
I mean, it was pretty crazy, and I'm old like you. So WCW, you see this guy who should not be even close to the main event, and some of the stuff he could do, it was absolutely awesome. And then the recency effect is, you know, last year at WrestleMania, I thought that was an actual good angle where you get the punk kid who thinks he's too big for his britches, and he could care less that that dad is a legend and I'm going to show you, and then starts back talking to his mom and whatever. And then Ray as the dad steps up and like, you don't talk to your mother that way. And that to me was more of a believable angle to get, obviously, you know, heat on Dominic and to kind of send him to the next level in the next stratosphere, so to speak. And now there's all speculation. I don't know how many spoilers we want to do, Mike, and stuff like that, but there's speculation all as to, you know, does Carlito turn on Ray? And then all of a sudden Dominic finally sees the light, because obviously like this whole thing with the Judgment Day, like they keep questioning like why he's doing certain things and why he's inviting certain people into the circle, so to speak, of the Judgment Day with Andrade last week or Santos Escobar, all these people or whatever. So there may be, I will say this, I think I'm mildly interested because there may be a nice little plot twist there.
Yeah. And I will say last year when Dominic Mysterio got street cred from the Latinos that he was with because he was in jail for overnight, you know, because he got escorted out of his dad's house, that made me cry. I laughed. I have to admit.
That was a good chuckle. Yes.
Now the next one coming up is Bianca Belair, Jade Cargo, and Naomi versus Damage Control, which is Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. Now, I will say, this Jade Cargo is unbelievable. She is an uber athlete. I don't know if she can wrestle in the ring. I think they've got a lot of work to do. But from a physically imposing standpoint, as athletic as Bianca Belair is, and you know, they try to, you know, push Charlotte Flair as being, you know, fairly athletic. But Jade Cargill looks like she could beat up half the guys on the show. So I do think it's going to be interesting to see how they get her in the match. And can the women of Damage Control, can they help her look good at a very early point in her career?
Well, is there a run-in of Brandon Phillips? Because Jade Cargill is, you know, married to Brandon Phillips, the former Reds, you know, second baseman and stuff like that. That would be kind of fun. And then to me, Mike, it's got to be setting something up. Once again, I don't think I'm, you know, breaking news, but fine. We'll throw stuff out there, whatever. Don't you just smell money when you see Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill next to each other and go, my word, those are two of the most powerful women, two of the most athletic women, two of the best. And why wouldn't maybe there be if it's a 3-versus-3, if it's a 6-woman tag match, you got to feel like there's going to be some heat somewhere. And I just smell money from a Bianca versus Jade Cargill matchup.
Yeah. And I just wonder how soon they turn Jade bad guy, because Bianca's so much better as the face than she is as a heel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, start them off as a bad guy, get people booing them, and then eventually they'll decide to cheer him. So I think Jade's got a career if she can move around the ring well. Now, I will say I don't hold that against a wrestler, because one of my top five of all time is Lex Luger. And, you know, he was a former NFL player, but he was not the most adroit wrestler in the ring. So I am with
Packers.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Lawrence Foal, I think, or Foul. I'm not certain how he pronounced. Yep. Yep.
That's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm old, and I've got a picture. I've got a picture. It's not up in my office, of me and Lex Luger in the 1990s when he went around on the. They tried to make him the American hero when he took on Yokozuna on the aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped in Madison for an autograph signing. And the reason he didn't ever get the title is because he just didn't draw fans. So it was like 7 little kids and me as like a 25-year-old in line. That was it. There was like nobody there. So, I think Jade, I won't hold that against her that she's not the greatest in the ring, but give her time to develop.
Absolutely. I thought maybe when you opened that door up that you were going to have a surprise entrance or like some ring announcement or somebody coming down the ramp on you.
That would have been much better planning than I'm capable of, but thanks for thinking about it, Lance. Now the 6-pack ladder match for the WWE Tag Team Championship looks like they got both sets of titles now based on what they said last night. So we got Finn Balor and Damian Priest versus Gargano and Ciampa versus The Miz and R-Truth versus Kofi and Xavier. So, you know, they're back. That's nice. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, and then Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. So I like Ciampa and Gargano from their NXT days. Mm-hmm. R-Truth is hilarious. If you have two sets of belts up there to climb up and grab for the championship, what's the odds that R-Truth doesn't get two of the same belt?
Very high. But and I think somehow, some way, just because he is so over and so hilarious, I think somehow, some way, he is going to be a champion of some type. You know, I think it would be hysterical. And the other thing, Mike, is since we're both old school WCW fans, remember when everything was on a pole for a while?
Oh,
every
yeah.
Every time I hear 6-pack challenge, I think, what are they just going to put like a bunch of Steve Weisers, you know, a bunch of like a 6-pack on a pole, and that's what the tag teams are going to be fighting over, and whoever brings the 6-pack down, the 6-pack challenge.
That actually sounds a little more entertaining than what they have planned. I like tag team wrestling. And here's the one thing that I think is really interesting is Vince McMahon never did, because he always wanted to move them into the singles because he didn't want to pay for two wrestlers. And if, you know, one became good, it's Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty goes out the door and you know, he's more effective at paying. And I often thought that the best tag team wrestling was done outside of the WWE, which was, you know, when you had this, you know, you had the Steiners and you had the Road Warriors and you know, even going back to, you know, when Bachwinkle would Bachwinkle and Stevens back in the AWA. So I'm really hoping that if they're going to do tag teams, now that Vince McMahon's not doing the booking, this could be kind of fun. And maybe the best way to do it is if you've got one title on SmackDown and one title on Raw, maybe you've got one poor wrestler on SmackDown who has to tag with R-Truth, and then a different wrestler of a tag team on Raw who has to, because he grabbed the wrong, but I mean, he's got an opportunity there, and I shouldn't spend this much time thinking about these things.
But he is entertaining. So no, I think that's hilarious. And the other thing is they have a huge roster now, and it does seem like under Triple H, kind of like what you hinted at, that tag teams are kind of back. It's more of like a renaissance or whatever you want to say of tag teams. And I do think that there is some truth to that they have so many guys on the roster and so many tag teams that they can push, you know, other individuals or whatever that don't get lost in the sauce.
Yeah. And I think that could be really fun, because the old days, NWA or WCW, you know, you used to have some fantastic tag teams, and they were, you know, you had tag team specialists, and so you could actually root for them over a period of time. So I think it will be fun to see how they go there. But speaking of tag teams, now we're having a split between the Usos. Jay and Jimmy are going to go at it. I like both guys. I think they both are, you know what I mean? And so, although Roman clearly does not like Yeet. but I, as I look at this match, my only wish they could have done different is this was good enough that I wonder if they should have done that at a pay-per-view before this, just because there's so many good matches, because I think these guys will be hard pressed to have a match better than what they're going to put on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a barn burner, and you're right. Like, it would be a shame if they – I think it's going to be a really, really good match, and it would be a shame if it got overlooked. But to me, the possibilities are endless. Like, do they – you know, because you know full well something's going to bubble over to that bloodline storyline, and whether it's one of these guys turning on somebody – or something happened. I think something is going to happen. And the precursor could be in this match, or whatever happens in this match. And, you know, brother versus brother, you know, it doesn't get much. Yes, it is the bloodline, but aren't you closer with your brother than you are with your cousin or with your, you know, usually, not always, but usually. So that's to me, one of the big storylines of this whole WrestleMania, Mike, is they could go so many different directions that would be good. And it wouldn't be like, why did they do that? Or, oh, that's hokey. Or that's, you know, that's just dumb made up drama. Seriously, there are like so many different directions they can go with this one. And with the bloodline story and with Cody and Roman and The Rock and, you know, Seth and Drew and all this stuff. And I'm sure we'll get into more of it. That once again, I think Jay and Jimmy, it could be a precursor of something to come later on down the road.
So let me ask you, what would you do if you were booking this? How would you do that? You have any ideas that you think would be more interesting in your mind?
It seems like they're pushing Jay more than Jimmy, so I definitely have Jay go over. And then beyond that, you know, it might be a situation where you know, if they want to up the tag team game, like, you know, yeah, it's bloodline rules, but then somehow Jimmy turns on night two and, you know, and I always preface it by saying, if somebody affects Roman, hits Roman, whatever, and then Cody goes over on night two, it's going to make Cody look weaker. So to me, it's more, Mike, like if somebody is going to get in the ring to go against Cody or whatever on night two, and then Jimmy steps up and is like, no, you're going to let them fight, the, you know, and say, right, like they stop The Rock, or they stop Solo Sikoa, or they stop Paul Heyman from, you know, slipping in a foreign object or whatever it is. That to me is more legit than somebody who legitimately like hits Roman Reigns, knocks him out, and then Cody gets an easy victory, and then Cody doesn't look very strong.
Yeah, I do think if Cody's going to win, they got to be very careful how they pull that off.
Yes,
and I do think the Usos, I like both of them. I think it'll be entertaining. I think they may, you know, you may have the ending here that, like you said, is a precursor to later on in the evening. And you wonder at some point at the end of this night, are they going to either be unified in the bloodline or unified outside of it?
Correct.
And I don't think they're going to end up separate entities after the evening or after the weekend. Now, maybe I'll be proven wrong on that.
No, I think you're right. I think whatever side, whether they're both heels in the bloodline or whether they both turn face and eventually go, you know, yeah, they separate themselves again and go down the tag team road. I think you are completely right. And I just think with how much they've been pushing Jay, I think Jay, if they did decide to keep him separate, Jay's got to go over, you know, because he seems like more of a singles threat. They had him even against Guther, obviously, one time. So I think that's pretty high praise. And you know, just whatever they decide to do with them, I think clearly Jay is over with that whole Yeet thing.
Yeah, oh, totally. So now the next one's a match that I think is one that Gunther is the champion for the WWE Intercontinental title, and you've got Sami Zayn coming after him. Now, Sami was infinitely, popular a year and a half ago, you know, a year ago. Now he still has a loyal fan base and everything, but he hasn't carried a boatload of heat with him. Although very quickly he gains it back. I think the guy is just, he tries hard and he has that character down so much. I don't know. Gunther to me, it seems like they're setting him up for a major push, maybe even to the top. Maybe he's a good guy if Cody was to win, maybe he's a good first defense. I don't see any way Sammy beats Gunther for this title.
I'm going to put it in the possible category, not okay. Strong. Like if you're an NFL injury report, doubtful, but at least there's a chance.
Okay.
And the reason why I'll say that, Mike, is if you saw what happened earlier this week, you know, Gunther, obviously, like, you know, basically just dragging Chad Gable's carcass out there.
Yes.
And whether Gable gets involved or whether, you know, Gable screws up Sammy's chances, who knows, but clearly he's going to be involved in some fashion. And maybe it is like, maybe Sammy needs all the help he can get and people don't mind. It's almost the reverse of the Cody booking. Maybe right. People won't mind Chad Gable cheating and, you know, helping his friend, Sami Zayn, to beat the evil Gunther and to get the belt off him, because I agree with you. I think with what now you could have him continue to, you know, be the IC champ and then have a title switch on. A lot of times they do stuff like that on Monday Night Raw the next night to keep people interested. So with Gable, like let's say Sammy can't get the job done. And then Gable says, then I'm going to step up and he actually does win the championship, whatever. But I do think eventually they're going to get the championship off of Gunther, because I think they do have other plans for him. And I think it's probably in the world title picture at some point.
Yeah. And I also think they've built him up enough. Now he really doesn't need a title belt, which, and people don't understand if you don't want to watch wrestling, title belts are how you make stars, is you put the title on somebody who's popular, who's moving up the charts, so to speak. And then you use that to make them a draw in the future. And the best example of a uber famous wrestler who literally had a title for like 3 days, that was about it, would have been Cody Rhodes' dad, Dusty Rhodes, who literally his story was, is he got the title and then got it taken away from him, you know, and so he could go back and chase the title again. And you know, between the politics and Flair didn't like to give it up anyway. You know, he was a massive star in the 80s and he didn't need it in 70s and 80s. And he didn't need a title to fill arenas.
The money is in the baby face chasing the title. That's where the money is. And Dusty knew that. He was a brilliant booker.
Yes. Now, if we go to the next one, and this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. The Rhea Ripley is the champion for the women, and she's going to be taking on Becky Lynch, the man. And I got to be interested with, I'm interested in your opinion, but to, I have not been real sold on Becky's motivation on this.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And so I really feel like I'm not certain that either of them are playing a face in this match all the way.
Right. Well, because, and I went to the SmackDown show here a few weeks ago in Milwaukee, like Rhea Ripley, when she appears on the screen or comes out or whatever, she gets a huge pop. And yeah, I mean, yeah, Judgment Day is supposed to be a heel faction, whatever. And obviously the whole pay-per-view in Australia was almost like a home game for Rhea Ripley. But she is extremely popular and people like her. And so I think you're right, Mike. And the other thing is, as hot as Becky Lynch was a few years ago, a couple of years ago with the man gimmick or whatever, I agree with you. I just don't see the sizzle. So in my opinion, why end a good thing? Why take the belt off Rhea Ripley? Because people, I mean, they could literally turn her face, and maybe that's what they're doing with the whole Dom thing. And then obviously Damian Priest kind of questioning why she's doing certain things or whatever, because I think they realize that there's money to be made, whether she goes up against Bianca or Jade Cargill or, you know, whenever Charlotte Flair comes back or whatever. I do think that having the belt still on Rhea Ripley is more money and better booking in the future.
And she just looks like she could take on either of those other two women. And you know, as physically impressive as they are and as athletic as they are, she can hang with them. And I think sometimes that's underrated, because right now, Becky looks a little more like the models that they had in the past, as opposed to the wrestlers that they've kind of been doing. And I mean, I'm not trying to knock her. She's gotten in great shape after, you know, being off on maternity leave. So, I mean, you know, but right now she doesn't, even I have a hard time stretching my imagination to think that if she attacked Rhea, that Rhea wouldn't just pick her up and, you know, crunch her into a little ball and throw her away.
Right. She's not an imposing figure. Like I think, Mike, it was more, what, if you want to use the word believable, like when Nia Jax broke her nose and there was blood all over.
Yeah, exactly.
And when she kind of started the man gimmick, I thought that was believable, because she was kind of like the underdog, but the crazy underdog that you didn't want to mess with. And to your point, I don't totally understand the motivation. Why? And I know she says, I've got self-doubt and I need to prove it and I need to beat you and whatever. But I guess I just haven't bought into that whole thing. So that's why I think Rhea Ripley keeps the title.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you there. And I kind of feel like, in some of the interviews, Becky actually knows that it's not going well. And because she's been around for a while, you know, she's, I hate to say it, but now she's a veteran, you know, which just makes me feel older. And I think she's probably got enough sense to go, this is not what I was hoping it would be.
Right.
But this leads us up to what I think is one of the more intriguing matches in the last 15 or 20 years. The Rock and Roman Reigns, who we thought originally it was going to be those two fighting for who controls the bloodline. Instead, the swerve happened. Cody decided he wanted to fight Roman because he got the right to do so. Then The Rock and Roman Reigns got mad at him, and then Seth Rollins came to his aid. Now we have The Rock and Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, and the stipulation will for the next day, Sunday's match, will be set by the winner of this. So if The Rock and Roman Reigns win, it's a bloodline rules match, which I don't know that there's an official rules for a Bloodline rules match, other than the Bloodline can do whatever they want. And if you've watched, the WWE has been signing Inoue people from other federations. So we might see additional Bloodline be introduced around the ring to make sure that Cody doesn't get a fair shake if indeed The Rock and Roman Reigns win on Saturday.
Well, and how about the old school? Like, I know Afa hasn't been doing as well, but Afa and Sika, you've got Rikishi, the father of Jay and Jimmy. So you've got the old guard. And then, like you said, you've got some newer guard that people probably aren't as aware of. I don't think that they can totally be in the picture, so to speak, because people wouldn't know them as well. Yeah. But maybe they could be slightly involved. And then my thing, Mike, is once again, I mean, we're here having a honest conversation, so I'm not trying to be Mr. Spoiler or spoil everything for people. But hey, if you're watching this or listening to it or whatever, it is what it is, I mean, how can you not think that, you know, in my opinion, The Rock and Roman Reigns are going to win somehow, some way, and that the deck is going to be told. Like, Cody's story is, what is he? He's like Dusty, where it was literally like one step forward, one step, or all these hurdles, and finally he gets the championship eventually. And I'll spoil the next segment of our show and say I do think he wins on night two. But on night one, I think that The Rock and Roman Reigns win, and there will be Bloodline rules for the actual championship between Cody and Roman. And whether that's Seth turning on Cody saying, you beat me three times and I'm, you know, I got more in common with the guy that I was in the Shield with than you, or, you know, if that happens, or somehow, like you said, like some other Bloodline members come out and just quietly, you know, do something that the ref doesn't see, or whatever happens, I just don't see Cody and Seth winning that match. And so it's the deck's going to be stacked on night two for Cody.
Yeah, and I think the buildup to this match has been nothing short of incredible. You know, early on, The Rock came out and he talked a little bit about, you know, being the High Chief, which is, to me, is a little bit of a foreshadowing that he's not necessarily buying in that Roman is the head of the Bloodline. Yep. And he's delivered a few lines looking at Roman instead of looking at Cody Rhodes, which makes you wonder, you know.
And putting up the L instead of the one. People have noticed that. So there's the breadcrumbs. But then what we talked about before, Mike, was like, okay, Jay and Jimmy, do they come back out and interfere in this match in some way, shape, or form? You know, like what he said, like one side or the other. And then the other thing is, I always look for subtle clues. Last week, when Seth was talking to Jey Uso, who was in the background? In the background was Paul Heyman talking to Drew McIntyre.
Exactly.
So were they having a side conversation like, hey, you help me in this match, I'll help you on for night two because Seth will be softened up. Whatever the conversation was, you saw him in the background behind Jay and Seth. So there's, like I said, there's so many different ways they can go with this. I guess some are probably better than others, but it's, to me, it's just intriguing. Like, what on earth is going to happen?
Well, the other thing that intrigued me was when the beatdown happened, when The Rock beat up Cody Rhodes at the end of the show and then kept going afterwards and forced the cameras to continue filming. Did you notice who was on the truck? Whose images were on the truck?
John Cena and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And once again, Mike, I love the fact that in the Triple H era, I wasn't always the biggest fan of his when he was a wrestler, and there was always comments
about, agree.
You know what I mean? Like
the click.
The whole him going over on Sting, whatever, was just ridiculous. But the what he is he has proven to be a great booker, great at storylines. And you cannot tell me that there's like subtle, it's like going down the rabbit hole when, you know, RIP Bray Wyatt, but like the whole rabbit hole, like, you know, this chase that, whatever. But it gets you thinking, and it's subtle, like I said, with McIntyre and Heyman talking, something's going on there. And then same thing, if it was about the current wrestlers, the truck has Roman Reigns' face on it, Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, you know, more current, whatever. When he's beating him down and the blood's on the belt and, you know, and what, and they're all in the rain or this or that or whatever, who's on the truck? John Cena and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So once again, night two, what, okay, Stone Cold can't interfere in the match, do something to Roman Reigns, in my opinion, and have Cody win, because then it would look like, well, Cody needed help, but there's no way. But if The Rock is about ready to get involved and looks like he's going to screw over Cody and the match is going to end in about 3 seconds and you hear that glass shatter, what do you think's going
to
happen?
Yeah, that is going to, and that is going to be a moment that everybody melts down. I mean,
it and is you see be... The Rock, I mean, and we all know they can't go as much as they used to, but wouldn't you be entertained to see Cody and Roman still doing whatever they're doing in the ring and to have Stone Cold come down and like go upside Rock's head and they're, you know, they're doing something outside the ring. And then same thing, like you said, like John Cena gets it, like John Cena, I'll say this. Who was the last guy that basically put John Cena on the shelf? It was Solo Sikoa with the, remember the repeated spikes, yep. Whatever. So, okay, Solo Sikoa, allegedly he might be next. Is Jay next? Is Solo next? You know, whatever in the Bloodline Dynasty. Well, Solo, you want to, like, and remember what happened last year. And look, this is my crazy wrestling mind working, but what happened? Solo hit Cody with the spike. Roman speared him. That ended the story. That ended the dream right there, at least at that point.
Right.
Well, what if Solo's ready to do it again? What better thing to do is, you know, you can't see me. Do, 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 do. You know what I mean? And he comes out and his revenge. I mean.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of WrestleMania is they've got the dollars that they will spend even for a brief moment like that. And I do think the other thing that's really interesting is we've seen a return of Seth Rollins back to a character that I like better than the crazy laughing Joker guy. When he gets into the Architect, he's a much better character. Now, I will tell you that when Roman Reigns came back from his leukemia recovery, Seth was a good guy. And then he had to abruptly flip to a bad guy so Roman could be the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Seth's career has ever totally recovered from that, because he was so popular at that time. I think given a different set of circumstances, because they had to keep figuring, because early on in Roman's career, now as a bad guy, he is fantastic, because his personality is, he's not very talkative. So now he just kind of looks at people, rolls his eyes, sneers, lets other people talk, and then does the brief stuff himself. Well, that's different than a face. And he's going to, you know, and I wonder if they hadn't flipped, if they had just had Roman come as a bad guy and Seth would have stayed as a good guy. I wonder if both of them, I don't know, you can be any bigger than Roman is, but I think Seth would be a much more believable opponent for Roman in the eyes of the fans had they not flipped him at that time.
Yeah. And I agree with you on the whole, you know, Joker-ish gimmick is it would have explained like what you did, like make it at least somewhat realistic and believable. If all of a sudden Seth was so mad about them continually messing with him and kept showing that, like you said, like, am I a good guy? Am I a bad guy? Why is Roman Reigns? I was part of the Shield too, and you're not giving me my love and whatever. And it literally starts to drive him crazy. And then he turns into this Joker-ish character. I could get behind that more. And there's probably more depth and more layers that have to go into it than just that. But to me, it's like, why did he all of a sudden come out? And I know the song is over and people yell it. And I thought it was a good sign for him recently that, you know, they when Punk was out there in Chicago and they said Seth freaking Rollins or Monday Night Rollins, like, okay, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, this is Chicago. So, okay, there are people that are behind him. He's actually gained some steam. But on the flip side, and to your point, Mike, I'm like, I would believe the Joker-ish gimmick more if it was like, hey, people keep messing with me and they don't give me my due and it's driving me crazy. And every week he little weirder and a little weirder and a little weirder. Okay, now you explained it. Right now, I don't even know yeah, why he does that.
I agree. And I've got a soft spot because when Bockwinkel was the champion, you know, back in the 70s, you know, he wasn't the brightest light in the patio, but he would carry around a dictionary with him so that he could use all those big words, you know, that then they would, you know, that the other wrestlers wouldn't know. And I always thought the architect, where he was planning ahead of the other two with Roman Reigns and I call him John Moxley.
John Moxley now, but Dean Ambrose.
Ambrose. Yep. And I thought the fact that he was always kind of thinking, I thought that was a good character role for him. So I think some of the things that have went on have helped hone Seth a little bit. But this one, I think we both agree that Seth has backed the wrong horse. And this is when the curtains close on Saturday night, I think things are going to look pretty dark, and it'll be like, it'll be like the end of the Empire Strikes Back.
Mm.
You know,
that's probably pretty good. Cody is a huge Star Wars fan. So it does make sense that there would be some Star Wars references and like the Rebel Force and all this stuff or whatever. It makes sense.
Yeah. So I think so. Let's take a look then at night two, the opening match, or maybe not the opening match, but the first one listed is Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits against the Final Testament, which is Occam and Razor, along with Karrion Kross. And I'm going to tell you right now, I think the WWE is making a massive, and I can't say that big enough, mistake, because I think Montez Ford, if you strap the rocket to his back, he is another, you know, WWE title contender. And I am, and nothing against Angelo Dawkins, who's a very talented guy himself, but I don't know why they're fiddle farting around with him in the tag team.
Same thing, Mike. So they were here, you know, for SmackDown, whatever, the way he moves in the ring. Oh. And you know, when you're in the audience, obviously they go to commercial break, whatever, the way he interacts with people during the commercial break and the way he does certain things and I so agree. Like, he's so athletic with what he does and the way he moves and the way he operates and certain things. And now you've got the reality show with his wife, Bianca Belair, and all, you know, all this stuff. And I'm with you. Like, it was always kind of rumored that eventually they were going to have him break out and do whatever. And I think it's time, because he looks like he can definitely be that guy.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope he can do that in the near future. And I will say, they are so star heavy. Maybe they're just counting the days, you know, waiting for the waters to get a little thinner at the top. But I think he's a guy that you could build a wrestling promotion around very confidently and be very successful. And I do think Lashley and the Street Profits will come over. And Karrion Kross, I've just never got him.
He was actually better in NXT, in my opinion, when he was the champion. It was more the entrance, like, it was, dare I say, because this is hallowed ground, so I'm probably going to get ripped for this, but it was almost Undertaker-esque. Yes. Like, that entrance that he had with his wife, you know, Scarlett.
Yep.
At least in a smaller venue, like the NXT Performance Center, it was eerie, spooky, and just the way he filled up the ring and the way they shot it or whatever, it was very believable. And then all of a sudden, I hate to say it, but he just spun his wheels once he got to the main roster. So I don't know if he's just one of those guys that at the NXT level looks like a monster, acts like a monster, and everything looks great, because I personally thought he was really good there.
Yeah.
And I thought it would translate, and it just never did.
Well, and don't you think it's the fact that he's just not that big? You know, I mean, when you get him, you know, you get around, people don't understand how big these wrestlers are. You know, you think he's a monster, and then he's 3 inches shorter than Drew McIntyre, which, again, that's, you're still a big man. I'm not trying to right. throw any shade at him. But when you look at the main roster of the WWE, I think that's probably the one thing that they'll have to think really hard about if they bring MJF over from AEW when he's a free agent, is at 5'11", maybe, How is he going to look, you know, next to these guys? Because already guys like Seth Rollins at 6'1", you know, and 225 have a hard time, you know, next to some of these behemoths.
Drew McIntyre, when they were in town, lifted at the same gym that I did. And he was at, I all of a sudden look over and I see him on the bench next to me. Let's just say, Mike, I didn't spot him. I just went over, done with his set. And I said, hey, Drew, I've interviewed you a couple of times, whatever. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. But yeah, he was way bigger than me. and it was, you could definitely tell, oh yeah, that's Drew McIntyre at the bench right next to me. And then the other thing is, sometimes I don't, because I'm not a wrestling insider, so I've seen videos of Karrion Kross doing, I don't know if it's Taekwondo, Muay Thai, you know, kickbox, whatever, on a, and you don't see him, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't see a lot of that in his matches. Now, there's there's got to be a reason why that, you know, they want him to portray and look like a big guy, and, you know, doing kicks and stuff doesn't make you look. But I'm telling you, one of the more impressive things I've seen him do of late is on his social media accounts, where he's like, let's just say the bag gets a workout. He's like kicking that thing and slamming it. And to me, that would be more believable. And I'd be like, okay, that guy's a force. He can do something.
That is, I did not know that. And that would be good. Now, of course, when you're talking about watching guys do athletic things on video, I still don't think there's anyone better than when Mr. Perfect came to the WWE, and he had Steve Jordan from the Vikings in that indoor facility, you know, over in Winter Park.
But still, it was one of the few times, Mike, where the Vikings actually had the consummate athlete that could get him to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
He threw a pass and he caught his own pass and he was sinking shots and he could do it all.
I know. I love it because Steve Jordan, you know, the all pro tight end of that era, he was standing there and, you know, Perfect goes back and he throws that ball up in the air. And of course they show this like a highlight of one of those Super Bowl, you know, touchdown passes.
Ceiling of the practice center.
And then you see him running in a pair of like Doc Sider shoes. Yeah, and he's and his Zubas, and a sweater or something. And he starts running, and then they show the ball in the air, and then they show him running, and then they show him at the other end catching his own pass. And hey, then that was great.
All I got to say is, like the Wizard of Oz, when you pull the curtain back, I can't tell you how many times I've had a piece of gum in my mouth when I go out to the set, and I literally spit it in my hand and slap it over to the side like Mr. Perfect. Yes, I've done that.
He's another one of my top five of all time. And I will tell you, the when he died, I have to admit it was very hard, because there was a guy that I had enjoyed being entertained by for probably close to 20 years. You know, you go back to when he won the title by having the roll of quarters and knocking the champ out and then covering it. And then as other people were trying to sweep the quarters out of the ring, I mean, He that was in his old AWA days. He was great. I mean, I really, had he not gotten that back injury, which led to the issue of drug abuse that led to his death, I think he might have went down as one of the legends.
The reason why they called him Mr. Perfect is, look at some of his movements in the ring. And guys that knew him or whatever, one of the most athletic guys ever in the squared circle. It was just looked flawless.
Yeah. I miss that guy, because he was fantastic. So look, we talked a little bit about Montez Ford. So Montez, you can throw the money our way. We'll be fine. LA Knight versus AJ Styles. I don't have a good, I assume AJ is going to lose this, but is this one where LA Knight playing, you know, being the guy who's kind of being not appreciated, cheated maybe. Is this one where AJ somehow, you know, cheats his way to victory so that LA Knight can have to be on the chase again? Or do you think this is LA Knight with his popularity just overwhelming AJ?
I think this is a big moment in LA Knight's career. You could probably tell, I probably like him a little bit more than you. I loved him when he was Eli Drake back in the TNA days. And trust me, you know, when he does the yeah back in TNA Impact, he used to do the dummy yeah, and he had a button or whatever. And sometimes I have people that I know that I'm like, man, that button would be worn out today. I'd be saying dummy yeah all day long. But I just think he is great on the mic. I've always liked guys that can handle the stick and talk and whatever. And it was always like, and he was a champion in TNA Impact, and obviously he's really good. But I think that was always the thing was, okay, can he go a 20-minute match? Can he handle this? Can he do that? Whatever. And so this, I think, is a big test for him. But why do you put a guy up against AJ Styles? Because AJ Styles is arguably one of the best wrestlers on the planet today, even at 47 years old or whatever he is. And he's all yoked up. I mean, look at the promos. He's as big as he's ever been. So I think they're putting LA Knight in this spot. He will probably go over, in my opinion. I think he does win, and try to put him in some type of a championship program, whether it's, you know, IC belt or US belt or whatever you want to say. And I think this is a huge test for him to say, like, hey, can you go with a guy like AJ Styles for 20 minutes and we get you ready for a championship program?
In fairness, AJ Styles is so good that I think he could be in a triple threat match with you and me and make us look like we were threats.
Absolutely. He could wrestle a broom handle and it would look poetic.
Yeah, because he is amazing. So now we go to the next one, which features a few of my favorite guys. So we've got Logan Paul. I have been amazed at his ability to pick up this sport. I don't know that I've ever seen anyone who has adapted quicker.
Yeah. You can not like him, you can not like the methods that he goes about it. I think he's, you know, good. I'm not a huge, huge fan, whatever, but you cannot hate on how unbelievably athletic and how quickly he's picked up everything and that's the reason why they put the belt on him, is because, it's unbelievable how quickly he got up to speed.
Yeah. And then you've got Randy Orton, who I think is one of the great underappreciated 13-time champions, because, you know, he was always overshadowed by Cena.
You and I talk for a living, so I it's recency bias. I like guys that know how to talk, how to deliver a message, and how to deliver it well. And the knock on Randy, no offense to him, was sometimes the promos were just kind of once again, one of the most athletic wrestlers to ever come through. There was a reason why he was the youngest champion ever at the time. Just oozing athleticism and you know, all that stuff or whatever. And now I think he's in a better place in life. He's not, you know, you saw the NE documentary and stuff like that. I do think his promo skills are light years ahead of where they were. And
yes,
you keep him in certain areas or whatever, and he can deliver. And I like.
And then, a guy that I think, you know, got the gut that I've developed, Kevin Owens. And I think Kevin Owens is another one of those guys. I think he's almost too good for his own good, because he can do humor. I still think the Festival of Friendship may have been, I think I literally cried through that whole thing.
And I can't believe that was the second match. And that's what basically Jericho sent him over to Japan. And to reinvent his career, he's like, okay, this was like arguably the most over thing that year, and we're number two on the card. You know what I mean? And it was just it was hilarious. And then to see one guy turn on the other or whatever, it was a great story. And then you bury it like that. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And I think Owens, again, he's another guy. His problem is he has to stand next to a bunch of statuesque people, you know, Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre, and you know, he doesn't look as cute, but when you go in the ring, he is something else in the ring. And then he throws himself into him and Sami Zayn, I think, do the best job of throwing themselves into whatever dumb stuff somebody throws at them, and they figure, okay, I'm going to turn this into something good.
Yep.
And so I enjoy Kevin, because he always finds the way to make something that I'm like, I don't even care about this. And then somehow this guy finds a way to make it interesting.
Yeah. You know, he's very funny, and he always does something to surprise me. I am a little bit like you, Mike, in the sense that sometimes I do have, and not that, trust me, I'm not a male model. I don't have 5% body fat like what I had when I was 18 years old. Yeah. So I'm not going to sit and criticize anybody else and body shame anybody, whatever. I'm just kind of like you. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult for me to be like, okay, the guy, obviously the guy that's got the 8-pack, the 6-pack, you know, 22-inch pythons, whatever you want to say, that guy usually looks a lot more impressive than somebody else that just looks like, but to Kevin Owens' credit, he's like the athletic guy at the end of the bar that can do swanton flips and all this stuff, yes, or whatever, still punch you in the mouth. So I give him credit that he always surprises me. Like you said, you know, like a lot of times you look at somebody who's a little more aesthetically pleasing or whatever you want to say, but he gets the job done and he's funny.
Yeah. And I'm right there. So I must be the non-wrestling equivalent of Kevin Owens. Now, Logan Paul's got, he's got fans. I mean, when this guy shows up, the lights go on and people pay attention. Does he need a title? I mean, I don't know that any of these guys really need a title.
He's number two. I literally, and you know what's crazy is working in the sports industry, Mike, you get all these like crazy prop bet emails and all these, you know, like different things. And so I've got like a couple of WrestleMania emails today. And one of the things they did was top 10 WWE wrestlers and popularity, and they measured it by like Instagram and Twitter and all stuff. He's number two to The Rock. How can you argue that he is that popular? And they also showed like the number of followers that they've gained in the last like week or last little bit leading up to WrestleMania. And he's still like one of the top two or top three in that department, like LA Knight and then him, and then maybe like one other person, like the top three. I mean, there's something there. There's definitely a sizzle factor there.
How do you book this one? Because I got to be honest with you, I don't know I'd have to see where they want to go overall story-wise, because it's hard for me with all three of these guys can kind of jump into anything you need them to. Mm-hmm. I would probably keep the belt on Logan Paul, but what are your thoughts?
I'm thinking that Logan Paul has so many interests and so many things going that I don't know. I think that's why they booked it as a triple threat, is they can keep him strong if he loses it. And, you know, he can jump back in some or whatever projects he has cooked up. He may just take a little break for a while. And no offense to Kevin Owens, but I think Randy Orton gets another championship, in my opinion. I think they realize that his back's not going to hold out forever. And they knew that he wasn't going to be in the main title bout picture. Right. And this is ability to carry another championship and maybe lift somebody younger on the roster or somebody else on the roster to another level.
Yeah. And maybe that's where you go next with LA Knight, you know,
yes,
go against Randy Orton. And again, I think Kevin Owens' problem is you can throw him into any different situation. So he's rarely in the big thing, but he's always in a thing because he's so dang good. And so he may be one of those guys at the end of his career who again, doesn't win a lot of titles, but has created a lot of moments that were pretty exciting. And like I said, I think you could put him in any wrestling promotion in the world and they would be so happy to have him because of his, he's like the five sport guy, you know, can do everything.
And Swiss Army knife. Like he literally does a little everything. Yep.
So now we go to a match that I'm going to confess I really don't care about. I haven't bought into Io Sky as champion. Mm-hmm. And I like Bayley as an individual. When I hear her interviewed, when I listen to her talk, she seems like a great person. I just don't care too much about her character until she's attached. Like her with Sasha Banks was great.
Yeah.
Her with when it was Bayley, Charlotte, you know, the four horsewomen.
Yep.
I enjoyed that. Individually, I have to admit, like Damage Control was great when they were cheating and then, you know, they kind of started to turn on her. That was entertaining. But her by herself, I don't know what it is, but I kind of tune out.
I agree. Like she came and did some in-game promotion stuff before the SmackDown here in Milwaukee. The Bucks had a Thursday night game and she did something with Bango. Bango ripped his shirt off like Hulk Hogan and showed a six pack, you know, and then she did the t-shirt cannon gun thing. And you could see her laughing because she was sitting on this platform thing, shooting the and wonderful person, whatever. And it seemed like, you know, all the good things that WWE has done, Mike, this one was kind of like, well, you know, they were building it up. And it was like, oh, we're kicking her out of damage control and whatever. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of seemed like the gears started to grind and it kind of just slowed down a little bit. And I agree with you. It's like, I think Bayley wins this because they want her to have another championship run. And it, you know, maybe it creates, you know, other heels and other avenues for certain people or whatever. But yeah, I think there was a build up there a few weeks ago and it just kind of sputtered.
Yeah, she's not bad. She's actually good on the mic, but I think she needs a foil that's better than Io Sky. And I think the AEW is finding the same thing with Sasha Banks. Or I'm sorry, Mercedes Moné, because she's not very good on the mic and she needed the engine of the WWE to kind of help her with the areas she wasn't great at. And I wonder in the end, if Bailey's not a lot better when Charlotte Flair's around and Sasha Banks is around and they're all interacting. And then I think she becomes much more valuable.
Absolutely. And it is a shame that Charlotte got hurt because there were whispers of the Four Horsewomen. And I think that would have been awesome. Like I'm an older fan and some younger people would be like, yeah, shut up, you old timer. You know, I'm the Simpson guy waiting, you know, shaking my fist, the beam out the clouds. But to me, a tip of the cap of you had Ric Flair in the arguably the greatest faction of all time, the Four Horsemen, and then you have Charlotte Flair and the Four Horsewomen and whatever incarnation you want it to be, but more than likely it would be Charlotte, Becky, you know, Bailey, and then I'm trying to think of who the, you know, now I'm going to space it out or whatever, but basically you could have a really competent group and they could, it would be awesome in my opinion.
I still have to admit when, because, you know, Sasha said that she's willing, you know, that she thinks she'll come back, you know, someday, which had to just piss Tony Khan off. But you know, I got to think that that's the angle they'll run when you get all four of them back.
Yeah.
You know,
with, that's why I was hesitating as to who the fourth member might, because it probably makes most sense for Sasha to be there. Charlotte's going to be out still a while because that's a longer term injury or, you know, knee injury like that or whatever. But yeah, you get Sasha, Bailey, Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks, you know, and Becky all together. And I think you can do some good business.
And by the way, it is not arguable. The Four Horsemen were the greatest faction of all time. You know, you can say what you want. The NWO started off incredible, but then when they started to have like people in the crowd could be in the NWO, there's like 70 people in the ring. I'd have to have ID. It's like a party, you know, who are you again? Scott Norton. Oh, you've wrestled once in the US in the last decade. Great.
Rest in peace. And I don't mean to besmirch the dead or whatever, but Virgil Vincent, when he entered the NWO, I knew it was about time.
Yeah. But I would say that the Four Horsemen were the one that they all go back to, you know, that they all go back to that, you know, their way of interfering. And it was funny because my dad does not like wrestling. He never really has. I got it from his dad. My grandfather would watch old AWA stuff with me when I was little. But I would say one thing when you know, in the 80s, we had TBS with that cable show on Saturday night. We would, you know, if there was a break in college football or something like that, he would actually stay in the room if Flair was going to be in there because he would pitch. He would pay attention to Flair, whether it was in the ring or not, you know, and when Flair tried to tell somebody that his alligator shoes were worth more than that person. I mean, it was just, those were the type of things that everybody, that's the template that was out there, you know?
I love it. I love it.
Now we're going to go to the match I think is fascinating, is Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. And I'll tell you two things that I think add to the intrigue. One is, nobody knows if Drew has signed a contract yet. He said he hasn't. His contract is up. I can't see the WWE wanting to let him go. But then again, now they have to, whatever they're going to sign him for, they've got Okada money that they have to match, Sasha Banks money that they have to match. Will Ospreay, who I think I really wish he had come to the WWE, but so they've got all this, these higher prices than what they probably really want to pay for Drew. And I think Drew has done more to build up this match than anybody because of his angle that he's taken, that Seth is screwing around. He's not, he's taking his eye off the ball, and I'm going to take his head off because he's more worried about the match on Saturday versus his title on Sunday. And I've listened to him be interviewed, and whether you know him as Drew McIntyre or Drew Galloway, doesn't matter. I think he's one of the nicest guys in wrestling. But the other thing is he is injected. He's basically been one man carrying this match because Seth Rollins has been involved in everything else. And then when they added CM Punk and they let that three-way go a couple weeks ago where it was CM Punk and it was McIntyre and then Seth Rollins came out, I thought that was as that was probably the best Raw since the Attitude Era.
Yeah. No, and you're right in the sense that Drew McIntyre basically, when I told you that gym story, he basically invited himself into our studio. He's like, hey, next time, let's not do it on Zoom. Like, he's just incredibly nice. And then the second thing is his promos have been spot on. Like, literally, oh, yeah. The old phrase, tell me when I'm telling lies. Like, you may not like what's coming out of his mouth, but the way he delivers it about, I said I was going to, I prayed for this, and I injured CM Punk, you know, and certain things like just the way he talks and the way he says certain things, it's like, well, he is pretty accurate on that. He's being truthful. He's just kind of being in your face about it. But and whether it's Seth's divided attention or can you trust that guy or, you know, this or that or whatever. No, I like it. I like where it's going. And I know the contract rumor stuff is out there, but I think we have a new champion in Drew McIntyre.
So do I, and I want to see where CM Punk is going to come in on this because both him, you know, but there was the back and forth. I mean, when Drew called himself the chosen one because Vince did pick him, you know, his first run to be the next big star, and then Drew kind of acted like an immature brat, and they ended up firing him when he said, I'm the chosen one. And when Punk came back with say the name of the man with all the virtue who made you the chosen one,
which to me seemed like it was off script. Like I was,
I don't think there was a script, Lance. I think they were all riffing out there.
Right. And so Drew McIntyre literally looked at, it was like, you know, like when you, same thing that like what we do with our kids or whatever, my wife and I, when you give them the dagger eyes or like, don't you dare or whatever, literally McIntyre was like, you know, full well that I can't say that guy's name. How dare you put me in that position? I mean, that was some good theater. There's no doubt.
And I thought then that he talked about how, you know, when he talked about something about CM Punk living the clean life, no drugs, no alcohol, and you spend a ton of time in rehab. And I'll hurt you again, something like that. I thought that was fantastic. And so I think McIntyre's a guy who got his title during the pandemic. So there was nobody in the arena. And so I think he has wanted to be a champion in front of crowds and to see what he can do. And I think he will have his opportunity.
I think he's earned it. I think for a while it was, why should, you know, no offense to him, he was so, and we can say it on here, even though WWE programming can't say it, is when he dumped Brock Lesnar over that rope for the Rumble, I thought, oh my word, he finally arrived and this is his moment. And it was just unfortunate for him that the pandemic hit right when obviously he got his push and right when he got his title run, and he did the best he could. Like he even said to me one time, I was doing an interview with him, Mike, and I said, I like the, you know, the Tiger King thing. And when he looked in the camera and he was like, hello, all you cats and kittens out there. And he was like trying different lines. He was trying different to be funny, but it was like, okay, there's no crowd here. It's stale. It wasn't his fault, but he was just the champion at the worst possible time and didn't get that like hero's welcome, hero's entrance, whatever. So I think now he deserves it. And that's why I think they're going to give it to him.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I'm a big fan of his, so I think that'll be fun. Now, Seth Rollins is probably my favorite wrestler when he's in more of the architect mode on the roster, but I do think there's things he can do Because this bloodline thing, which we'll be talking about in a second here, I think this could spin off in 90 million directions.
Yes.
So they've got an opportunity, especially with The Rock. You know, they set up two rings in L.A. for him to get back into shape. And he's been wrestling, you know, and has been getting coaching. And so the only thing I worry about is at his age, and I'm 56, so I'm a little older than he is, but you do have to worry about something that would not cause you a problem, causing you a problem.
And well, so he got injured one of the last times that he was at a WrestleMania. So yeah, no, that's a legit concern. And especially as big as he is, like, God bless him, he's yoked up and he's been in the gym, Iron Paradise, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
He's been there. But as you get older, Mike, as you well know, if you're more muscular, you're even tighter than what you used to be before, because yep, you're not as fine. So that tag match, you got to figure that you'll see him in the ring. And obviously he was pretty blown up a few weeks back, you know, when he did a few things, like he was huffing and puffing pretty good. He'll be in great shape and he will go. It's just, you got to have Roman probably do a little more of the heavy lifting, because you're not a young man anymore.
No. And Roman will be the guy, and he's not known for real long matches either. So I got to think that there's going to be plenty of interference that will be interspersed in that tag team match to make it passable for The Rock to be in there. That way, you know, 'cause yeah, he goes for 3 minutes and then, you know, in comes somebody else, and then that gives him a chance to get a blow. And so I think there'll be interference time throughout the tag team match. And then we get into the universal match, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. Mm-hmm. Now, I think there's two ways this is going to go. One is Roman Reigns loses clean to Cody Rhodes. And then when that happens, I think The Rock is going to be so mad of all the machinations he put in place. And I think he's going to give Roman the treatment that he's given Jay and Jimmy and whoever has failed him, Sammy, you know, when they fail to do his orders. I wonder if Roman's going to be on the other side. And now you'll have this, you could have this bloodline 6 month to where when it's done on the other end, Roman could be a good guy.
That's very possible. The other thing is, you got to figure, okay, I'm not a Hollywood insider, but I do know enough to know that, like, when an actor, The Rock has had so many box office smashes and hits and whatever, but let's face facts, he's had a couple of clunkers, Black Adam, some of the recent things he's done, whatever, that basically in Hollywood, what they do to tell you to refresh your image or whatever is, what do? You go away for a while. And let's also face facts, Mike, is I don't think there's a lot of Hollywood people that are watching wrestling. Yeah. So he can go and he can drop F-bombs and he can be edgy Rock. And quite frankly, some of the stuff he said about, you know, Phoenix being the cocaine and meth capital, and, you know, and saying, like, you know, watch your mouth or I'll slap the herpes off your lips. Quite frankly, I've thought that he's gone, you know, like, for being Mr. Disney, he's clearly gone the other direction, pretty edgy. But clearly, like, I think he's done this to distance himself from some of the stuff that's happened. He's got a little break in his schedule, whatever, they told him to kind of go away, and then you'll be fresh again, whatever. But you're also still dealing with a limited window, because eventually he's going to get back to Hollywood and film his next project, or Disney's got something for him, or whatever's going on. You have a limited window. So that's the one that I buy more, is as much as you're going to have interference from The Rock and Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa and maybe the Usos or whoever shows up, and then Cena and Stone Cold and whatever, I think Cody Rhodes goes over, because I think you're going to have that limited window where The Rock is just disgusted. And instead of acknowledging him, he gives him the L loser or does whatever. And he's like, okay, here's the match that nobody, you people didn't want, but that guy is not my tribal chief. I'm the final boss. Here we go. And you get a couple of those matches before he rides off into the sunset.
Yeah. You do that. The culmination being SummerSlam.
Yes.
You know, and you do it big. Now the other way to do this is for cheating the way and Cody doesn't win it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is the, you know, not the, again, always in chase mode. And then you could have Roman and Rock get mad, but there's less reason why. And I almost wonder if we could see Cody win it. And you got the Roman and Rock thing going on. And I wonder if the night after WrestleMania, because Dusty lost titles like the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder, is there somebody on this roster?
I'll tell you who.
Go ahead.
Who's got the Money in the Bank briefcase?
Yeah, Damian Priest.
Nobody's talking about him. What is something? I don't think you do it on. I mean, Seth Rollins has got one of the best cash ins next to Dolph Ziggler. Those two to me are two of the best, and Edge is probably up there, ranked number three. But those like Ziggler and obviously Seth at WrestleMania are two of the best. I don't think they do it at WrestleMania because it would be such a blow, that Cody. But I could see it happening the next night.
Exactly, that's what I think. And then that would be so Rhodes-ish.
Yes, that you did achieve the dream, but then guess what? And that would put Damian Priest in another stratosphere as far as heel heat. I could see something like that happening. I do have a hard time, and I'm not being Mr. Spoiler, I have a very hard time seeing Cody lose, reason being, it's the old adage, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, that I mean, to me, it would leave Cody dead in the water. Yes, there's talk about how he could win it the next night, or he could, or they could, Roman could beat Hogan's record and somehow they do something at SummerSlam or whatever you want to say. I just don't think, like, and Cody would be kind of dead in the water. Everybody'd be like, well, he just can't get it done. Nice guy, but can't get it. And then, the Rock's not sticking around. So even if the Rock says, hey, now that we got the people, now that we finally told the people where to go and they didn't know what they were talking about anyway, now we can go at it and see who the Rock's not going to be around that long. So if Cody doesn't do it, who do you have that's next in the wings? That's, like CM Punk is not medically cleared and still going to be a while. So I don't think you have anybody waiting in the wings. So your scenario with like the next night or Damian Priest or whatever makes total more sense. I just don't see Cody losing, in my opinion. It could happen, and they could maybe want, they keep talking about Hulk Hogan is next on the list and the streak and all that stuff or whatever, but I just don't know where you'd go from there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that's a harder way to write it. And depending on, because then you get this bifurcated thing too, because people do want to see Roman versus The Rock. And if Roman were to win, people would be like, well, Cody deserves the win. So now you've got like two different stories going there. And I'm not certain that's the easiest story to tell, where you've got dual ones. I will say, if anybody can pull it off, it's Triple H.
Yes.
But I just think there's an issue there. The other guy I wonder about is, we've seen a couple times, I don't know if you've noticed this, stop me if you have, but we've seen a certain advocate who's been sucking up to The Rock a lot lately. And well, I'm just wondering.
Drew McIntyre, he was seen in the background with Seth and Jay talking, whatever they were talking about with Drew McIntyre.
Yes.
And I'll just say, now, this would, once again, you'd have to tell the story and paint it, whatever, Mike. What if Paul Heyman, obviously knew Dusty Rhodes well and also likes the Rhodes family, Paul Heyman is an equal opportunity offender. He went from CM Punk, the original guy,
bingo,
to Brock Lesnar, to Roman Reigns, to who said, and he's going to the Hall of Fame, who says that he doesn't hitch his wagon to Cody Rhodes, and Cody Rhodes eventually. Now, I don't know if you do it right away, because that might like take the story down, or not be as good or whatever. But eventually, like him and Cody Rhodes hooking up, and he's Cody's advocate, and Cody turns heel.
Yeah, and I could see him flipping sides to The Rock, you know, once if Roman loses and then all of a sudden he's The Rock's guy. And I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go. And I go back to my earliest remembrances of him. He was actually the manager for a guy by the name of Mean Mark Callis. And he would talk about that Mean Mark Callis had the heart punch. And if he hit you, he could kill you. And so I remember seeing him back in the days when he had the big phone with the long antenna on it. And so people don't realize Mean Mark Callis, of course, was Mark Calloway, i.e. The Undertaker. And so in the old days, the NWA, WCW, it's hard to figure out exactly when that line drew. But him and Psycho Sid Vicious used to be a tag team champions. They were the Twin Towers. So I mean, you would have all these things. But he's always been able to quote hitch his wagon to an up and comer, and you kind of wonder, you know, maybe he just decides like The Rock is, you know, but Roman didn't get things done. Paul Heyman would just kind of go and be The Rock's guy when The Rock can't be here, which then allows for The Rock's schedule to be explained.
Yeah. No, that makes at least some sense. You know, I know, you know, we're amateur bookers, and basically, like, I'm sure there's some things that people would be like, oh my word, that's too convoluted, or I wouldn't understand this or that, but at least some of that makes sense. And, you know, you work on the fine details or whatever, but at least it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, any other final thoughts? Because we've had a lot of fun and we've went through all of WrestleMania. Any final thoughts as we wrap up here?
I honestly am looking forward to it. It's one of the few times where I will admit, Mike, I was skeptical on the split two nights. I know where it came from was that one WrestleMania where, unfortunately, the women's match, you know, between Ronda and Becky and Charlotte was on at what, like, you know, the wee hours in the morning, essentially. After or whatever, which was unfair to them. But I understand where it comes from, but a lot of times I'm a little skeptical as to how much filler are you going to put into two nights, but I think there's very little filler and a lot of meaty substance. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. I'll probably be proven wrong. Anybody who knows my record on telling you who's going to win, if they go bet at Vegas against me, they usually do pretty well. But I feel like Purdue and UConn are just going to blow the doors off of their respective foes. I don't see those games as being very competitive. Now, I'd be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But and so to me, it's like I could actually see that I'm not going to watch. I may not even watch the Saturday night game on delay because it may be so one sided that I just tune into WrestleMania and you know, watch the college basketball on my iPad or something and go big TV with WrestleMania. And then Sunday night obviously is wide open. And then, you know, you watch it's a late night on Monday because you watch the NCAA game. And then in between commercials and stuff, you keep up with what you can on Raw. So,
yeah, I agree with you. If we're going to talk a little basketball, I mean, obviously, in the East parts, you see UConn go up against Marquette. You realize how legit UConn is. And so I can't imagine anything can happen. But I can't think UConn was probably the most legit team all year. And I know it's easy to say when they're the defending champs. But to me, they could very easily go back-to-back. And then I'm mainly with you. Maybe it's just the scorch marks of the past that I'm a little skittish still on Purdue. Even though they look way better than in years past and they look more focused or whatever, I believe a little bit in the Cinderella, you know, unbelievable story of North Carolina State. So I'm definitely leaning Purdue. And I agree with you in the sense that if North Carolina State did make the title game, I think that's where UConn would be proven to be the much better team and it wouldn't be as good of a game. So,
yeah.
It's just, you know, I love a good Cinderella story, but I think the best championship game would be UConn Purdue.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on. Of course, Lance Allen, TMJ4 Sports, you can find him there. And we call him the ultimate free agent. So we look forward to see what the future holds for you at the end of that path. And thank you so much for coming on. And depending on how people, you know, react to this, we may end up doing a SummerSlam episode. we might have to do the big four, you know, and just make this a thing. And you know, Illini guys fans, we did warn you this was going to have no Illini in it because I tried to make sure I didn't talk about 30 to nothing in terms of.
Like you said, Mike, it might be more popular than I and the Illini or some other stuff or whatever. So who knows what direction it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, with that, folks, we, of course, will be back after these commercials, but we do appreciate you listening.
Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across the country, or on the other side of the world, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know, be it in-game results, top-level stories, or the latest behind-the-scenes info and recruiting, IlliniGuys.com has you covered. For about 25 cents a day, you can have an inside path to your favorite Illini teams, and we'll even throw in a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button, and get immediate access to dozens of stories each month, message forums, free giveaways, and more. IlliniGuys.com.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-485-8801. 800-485-8801. That's 800-485-8801.
Thank you so much for listening to this off-topic episode of Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley thanking Lance Allen for taking some of his time on a busy evening to talk about WrestleMania 40. We've had a lot of fun. We got a chance to laugh a lot. I hope you did too. Go Illini.